Sean whirled and followed the direction of his outstretched arm. "What is it, man?" He was looking ahead, and he did not see Ricardo turn to Pumula and snatch the Rigby rifle off his shoulder. But he heard the metallic clash of the bolt as Ricardo chambered a cartridge. "Capo, what the hell are you doing?" He reached out to restrain him, but Ricardo shoved him backwards. Sean was unprepared and off balance, and he staggered and almost fell. Ricardo ran forward to the head of the line, and then he stopped and threw up the rifle. "Capo, don't do it!" Sean was sprinting to catch him, but the Rigby crashed out, and the barrel jumped high, driving Capo back a pace with a heavy recoil. "Have you gone crazy?" Sean could not reach him before he fired again, and the heavy bullet tore a flurry of white wet bark from the trunk of the baobab. The echoes of the shot rolled across the plains. "Capo!" Sean reached him and seized the rifle, forcing the muzzle up towards the sky, just as Capo fired the Rigby for the third time. Sean wrested the weapon out of his grip. "In the name of all that's holy, man, what on earth do you think you're doing?" All their eardrums were numbed by the thunder of gunfire, and Sean's angry, outraged voice sounded small and hollow after it. "To Cotilla," Ricardo mouthed. "Don't you see? Why did you stop me?" His face was still flushed and he was shaking like a man with malarial fever. He reached once more for the Rigby in Sean's grasp, but Sean jerked it away from him. "Pull yourself together," he shouted angrily and tossed the empty rifle to Job. "Don't let him do it again," and turned back to Ricardo. "Are you out of your mind?" He seized him by the shoulders. "The sound of those shots will carry for miles." "Leave me," Ricardo struggled. "Don't you see him?" And Sean shook him viciously. "Snap out of it. You're shooting at a tree. You've blown your lid." "Give me the rifle," Ricardo was pleading, and Sean shook him again and roughly turned him to face the baobab. "Look at it, you bloody madman. That's your elephant." He shoved him towards it. "Take a good look." Claudia ran forward and tried to restrain Sean. "Leave him alone. Can't you see he's sick?" "He's gone crazy," Sean pushed her aside. "He's calling up every Frelimo and Renamo thug within 50 miles. And he's chased any elephant." "Leave him." Claudia came back at him, and Sean let go of her father and stepped back. "All right, ducky. He's all yours." Claudia rushed to her father and embraced him. "It's all right, Papa. It's going to be all right." Ricardo was staring uncomprehendingly at the deep, raw wounds in the bark of the baobab from which sap was oozing. "I thought it was..." He shook his head weakly. Why did I do that? I thought it looked like an elephant." "Yes, Papa. Yes." Claudia was hugging him. "Don't upset yourself." Job and the rest of the hunting team were quiet and unhappy, watching this strange episode that none of them could fathom. Sean turned away in disgust. It took him a few seconds to get full control of himself, and then he asked Matatu, "Do you think we are close enough for Tukutila to have heard the shooting?"
"The swamps are close, and the sound carries over this flat earth as it does over water," Matatu shrugged. "Perhaps the elephant heard. Who knows?"
Sean looked back the way they'd come. From the ridge they could see across the floodplain into the dusty distances. "Job, what chance that the Turs heard?"
"We'll find out the hard way, Sean. Depends how close behind us they are."
Sean shook himself, trying to rid himself of his anger, the way a spaniel shakes off water.
"We'll have to rest here. The Mambo is sick. Brew a billy of tea, and we'll decide what to do," he ordered.
He walked back to where Claudia was still holding her father. She faced Sean defiantly, turning her body to shield Ricardo from him.
"Sorry I pushed you round, Capo," Sean said mildly. "You gave me a hell of a fright."
"I don't understand," Ricardo mumbled. "I could have sworn it was him. I saw him clearly."
"We will break for a cup of tea," Sean told him. "I think you got a touch of the sun. It can turn a man's brain to jelly." "He'll be fine in a few minutes," Claudia said confidently, and Sean nodded coldly at her. "Let's get him into the shade."
Ricardo leaned back against the bole of the baobab and closed his eyes. He looked pale and bewildered. A rash of sweat droplets sparkled on his chin and upper lip. Claudia knelt beside him and dabbed them away with the corner of her scarf. But when she looked up at Sean, he jerked his head in a peremptory gesture, and she stood up and followed him.
"This doesn't come as any surprise to you, does it?" he accused, as soon as they were beyond earshot.
She didn't reply, and he went on.
"Just what kind of daughter are you, anyway? You knew he was sick, and you let him come out on this jaunt."
Her lips were trembling, and as he stared into them, he saw that her honey-coloured eyes were swimming. He had not expected tears from her. They took him by surprise. He felt his fury slipping away, and he had to make an effort to bolster it.
"It's too late to start blubbering now, Ducky. We've got to find a way to get him home. He's a sick man."
"He's not going home," she murmured, so low that he barely caught the words. Her tears were hanging on thick, dark lashes, and he stared at her in silence. She swallowed hard, and then she said, "He's not a sick man, Sean. He's dying. Cancer. It was diagnosed by a specialist before we left home. He predicted that it could attack the brain like this." Sean's fury crumpled.
"No," he said. "Not Capo."
"Why do you think I agreed to let him come and insisted on coming with him? I knew that this was his last hunt, and I wanted to be with him." They were silent, staring at each other. And then she said, "You care. I can see that you truly care for him. I didn't expect that."
"He's my friend," Sean said, puzzled himself by the depth of his own sadness.
"I didn't think you were capable of gentleness," she went on softly. "I may have misjudged you."
"Perhaps we misjudged each other," he said.
And she nodded. "Perhaps we did," she said. "But thank you anyway. Thank you for caring about my father."
She began to turn away to go back to Ricardo, but Sean stopped her. "We still haven't settled anything," he said. "We haven't decided what we're going to do."
"We go on, of course," she answered. "Right to the bitter end. That's what I promised him."
"You've got guts," he said softly.
"If I have, then I got them from him," she replied, and went to her father. The mug of tea and a half dozen anodyne tablets revived Ricardo. He was acting and talking completely rationally again, and none of them made any further reference to his wild behaviour, although quite naturally it had thrown a pall over all of them. "We must move on, Capo," Sean told him. "Tukutila is walking away from us every minute we sit here." They followed the ridge of high ground, and now the odour of the swamps was stronger, brought to them by the fitful, inconstant wind. "That's one of the many reasons the elephant likes the swamps," Sean explained to Ricardo. "There the wind is always shifting, turning and switching. It makes it much more difficult to get close to them."
There was a gap in the trees ahead, and Sean stopped, and they gazed out through it. "There they are," he said. "The Zambezi swamplands."
The ridge on which they stood was like the back of a sea serpent swimming across the open floodplains. Now, just ahead of them, it ducked below the surface and disappeared at the point where the open plains gave way to endless expanses of papyrus and reeds. Sean raised his binoculars and surveyed the swamps ahead. The reed bed seemed limitless, but he'd flown over them and he knew that they were interspersed with shallow lagoons of open water and narrow winding channels. Farther out, almost on the horizon, he could see the loom of small islets, dark patches of almost impenetrable bush-crowned islands.
and through the lens of the binoculars he could just make out the curved palm stems with their high, fluffy heads. The past season had been particularly dry, and the water level would be low, in most places not more than waist deep, but the mud banks would be black and glutinous, and the channels much deeper. The going would be arduous, and apart from the mud and water, reeds and water plants would impede each step they took, winding themselves around their legs as they tried to move. For them, each mile through the swamps would be the equivalent of 5 on dry land, while the elephant would be in his element. He loved mud and water. It supported his great bulk, and his foot pads were designed by nature to expand as he put his weight upon them, forcing a wide opening, and then they would shrink in diameter as he lifted them, freeing themselves readily from the clinging mud. Tukutila could gorge on reeds and soft water plants and swamp grass, and the dense, bushy islets would afford variety to his diet. The suck of mud and the splash of water would warn him of an approaching enemy, and the fitfully turning wind would protect him, bringing the scent of a pursuer down to him from every quarter. In all Tukutila's wide range, this was the most difficult place to hunt him.
"It's going to be a Sunday school picnic, Gapo." Sean lowered the binoculars. "Those tusks are as good as hanging over the fireplace in your den already."
The old bull's spoor went out to the very edge of the land bridge, and then down into the papyrus beds, where the undulating sea of green fronds swallowed the trail and left no sign.
"Nobody can follow a trail in there."
Ricardo stood at the line, where dry, friable earth ended and damp swamp mud began.
"Nobody can find Tukutila in there," he repeated, staring at the wall of swamp growth higher than his head. "Surely they can't."
"You're right. Nobody can find him in there," Sean agreed. "That is, nobody except Matatu."
They were standing in the remains of a village that had been built on the end of the isthmus. Clearly the previous occupants had been fishermen, members of one of the small tribes who live along the banks of the Zambezi, and make their livelihood from her abundant green waters. Only the racks on which they had dried their catches of tilapia bream and barbled catfish still stood, but their huts had been burnt to the ground. Job was searching the outskirts of the village, and he whistled for Sean. When Sean went to join him, he was standing over an object which lay in the short grass. At first glance, Sean thought it was a bundle of rags, and then he saw the bones protruding from it. They were still partially covered by shreds of dried skin and flesh.
"When?"
Sean asked.
6 months ago, maybe."
"How did he die?"
Job squatted beside the human skeleton, and when he turned the skull, it snapped off the vertebrae of the neck like a ripe fruit. Job cupped it in his hands, and it grinned at him with empty eye sockets.
"Bullet through the back of the head," Job said. "Exit hole this side."
It was like a third eye in the bone of the forehead. Job replaced the skull and walked deeper into the grass. "Here's another," he called.
"Renamo's been through here," Sean gave his opinion. "Either looking for recruits or dried fish, or both."
"Or else it was Frelimo looking for Renamo rebels, and they decided to question them. With an AK." "Poor buggers," Sean said. "They get it from both sides. There'd be plenty more of them lying around. They're the ones who escaped from the huts before they burned."
They started back towards the village, and Sean said,
"They were fishermen. They would have had their canoes here. They will probably be hidden, but we could certainly use one. Go through the edge of the papyrus beds and then search the bush behind the village."
Sean crossed to where Ricardo and Claudia were sitting together. As he came up, he looked at her inquiringly, and she nodded and smiled optimistically. "Papa's doing fine. What is this place?" He explained their reasoning as to the fate of the village.
"Why would they kill these innocent people?" Claudia was appalled.
"In Africa these days you don't have to have a reason for killing somebody, other than a loaded gun in your hands and a fancy to fire it off."
"But what harm could they have done?" she insisted.
Sean shrugged. "Harbouring rebels, withholding information, hiding food, refusing the services of their women, any of these crimes, or none of them."